Today we're reading from Psalm 37, verses 1 through 6. For like the grass, they will soon wither. Like green plants, they will soon die away. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and enjoy safe pasture. Take delight in the Lord, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Commit your ways to the Lord. Trust in him, and he will do this. He will make your righteous reward shine like the dawn, your vindication like the noonday sun. The word of the Lord.
Try that one more time. Good morning, New Life. All right, so it's very important that you guys pay attention this morning because I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm a teacher. And so there will be a quiz at the end. Just would like to let you all know, graduation is on the line. When Pastor John first asked me if I was interested in doing this, and I was like, you know what, yes, let's go ahead and let me preach this gospel. And he's like, all right, well, you pray about it and let me know kind of what you want to preach on. I was like, okay, prayed about it, did some reading, and I came up to him and I was like, you know what, I think I want to preach on hope. And he's like, wow, because Advent is coming up and the first one we do is on hope. I did not know that, but it turns out that I know a guy that did. I'm going to preach to you guys about hope. Hope is, it's a wonderful thing and could be a scary thing. Because sometimes we feel hopeless in this world. I'm a teacher, and I tell you, 90% of the time, it's amazing. It's awesome. Good feelings, see stuff, and it's great. But there's that 10%. There's that little 10%. And it doesn't feel so good sometimes. Sometimes it makes me wonder. Sometimes it makes me question, like, am I doing this right? If you've ever played tennis or seen someone play tennis or heard of a good tennis player, right? You got the Williams sisters, right? You got Federer, you got Garcia, right? They're all pretty good tennis players, but I guarantee you none of them are as good as a wall, right? That wall is always going to return the ball back. No matter how good they are or how they move that ball, that wall is going to win. Sometimes teaching, it feels like I'm playing tennis against the wall. And I feel like I can't win. I'm like, how do I reach these students? Like, I'm trying. I'm going to try this way. I'm going to try that way. I'm going to try this way. I talked to a respondent teacher and a former administrator that's trying to help this other student. I'm like, I'm trying. They're just not responding to anything that I'm throwing out. And they're like, well, just keep trying. I'm like, okay. I feel like I'm not getting anywhere. Nothing is happening. Like, are they really learning? I go and I teach this great lesson. I think it's going great. It's going wonderful. And then I give the test and I get it back and I'm like, wow. Is this in the right language? What is going on with this? Right? I'm just, what's happening? Am I really making a difference here? I try. I don't just teach economics and government. That's like the content that I teach, but I want to teach them life lessons. I want them to be better people. Right? But is it working? And as a senior teacher, a lot of times I don't get to see that. That's one of the hardest things about being a senior teacher is that I don't get to see that. I have freshman teachers that talk and they're like, oh yeah, I had this kid as a freshman. Now here they are as a senior and they've made so much difference. They haven't got arrested. They ain't doing this. They ain't pregnant. Like, man, look at them. It's great. And I'm like, I hope that worked because I won't see them. And it's hard. And sometimes I feel hopeless. Like, am I making a difference here? Is this really working? Like, am I doing anything? And I go and I get despair and I think about that. Then I look at what's going on in the world and politics and we're all looking to all these guys like, oh, well, if we only voted this way, then, man, maybe things will be better. Oh, if we only voted this way. I can't believe that law is passed. Like, they're legalizing what? That's crazy. I'm just, hey, look at the economy. I went to the grocery store the other day, and I was like, wow, bacon really shouldn't be $15 a pound. Now, I did buy the bacon, but it's because it was bacon. You want to make food taste better, add bacon. But like, the economy is going crazy. You're like, hey, people's wages are up. Yeah, that's because all the other stuff is up. I messed up, and I studied economics in college. So they can't lie. And I know. And it's hard. And I look at like people getting sick and they're dying. I got a wonderful young lady in my class, and she is the greatest girl. and she's so nice and wonderful, and I'm hoping that she gets to see her 20th birthday. It's hard. It's hard. I'm like, God, like, where do we go from here? Where are we at? Right? It's hard. We feel hopeless. We are in a hopeless world. I want to give you guys some statistics. The first statistic I got for you is that over 50% of them, I only feel down, depressed, or hopeless. I don't know if y'all know this, but we live in the United States of America. The world has this poverty line of less than $2 a day. If you live on less than $2 a day, you live in poverty in the rest of the world. You wanna know how rich America is? We set our own poverty line. We said, well, if you make less than $13,000 a year, then you live in poverty. The rest of the world is at $600 a year. We said $13,000 a year. We have everything here. We live in the Central Valley. There is so much food in the Central Valley that we just like, oh, well, okay. I remember going to KFC at night as a kid and being like, hey, they're about to close, so they're going to throw in some extra stuff because they have to throw it away. Like, we go through corn mazes, right, where people are going through corn mazes. How am I going to get out the corn maze during Halloween? And then you go to other places, they would eat their way out. Like, you're telling me you made food a game? Is that what you're telling me right now? Right? That's America, all right? And half of us are depressed or down. And what do you think? The other 50 is happy? Or do you think they're too prideful to admit it? We're in a hopeless world. What about our students? 42% of our students felt persistently sad or hopeless. The word there that gets me is persistently. I don't know if you guys know students, or I know teenagers a little bit, and one day they're happy, next day they're sad, then they're mad, and it just kind of goes like this depending on the period, right? But persistently sad or hopeless, they're unhappy. What does that tell you about our culture? What are we promoting in our culture that 42% of our students are persistently sad or hopeless? What does that say about our parenting? What is going on with us as a people where we're parenting and they're sad and hopeless? 51% of U.S. teens identify as Christians. Pause. So keep that in mind, that 51% say that they are Christian. Okay? 51%, over half, say they're Christian. But, there's that but, only 8% display beliefs and behaviors that are consistent with being committed to their faith. That's the fruit. So 42% feel persistently sad and hopeless, and only 8% of the 51% that actually say, like, oh, I'm a Christian, but only 8% actually have fruit. You think that'll match that 42%? Maybe that's why. Hopelessness is a horrible thing. Hopelessness, like, where does this hopelessness come from? Where is it at? Hopelessness comes from taking your eyes off the God you know, or not knowing the God that you should. I'm going to say that one more again. Hopelessness comes from taking your eyes off the God that you know, or not knowing the God that you should. Why do we feel hopeless when we got a God that has never failed us? When we have a God that wins, we win. At the end of the game, we win. But we're hopeless. Because we're, well, I don't know, God. It's just, maybe, I don't know if it's going to work out for me. Or, like, look at that over there. Like, that's crazy. And we're taking our eyes off of him. Or you got people that don't know him or refuse to look at him because they love the darkness rather than the light. Hopelessness is an enemy, and it's one of the greatest enemies of all Christians. One of the reasons why is because it leads us to that mistrust. We feel hopeless because we don't trust God. We don't believe he can do it. And then that mistrust leads right over to pridefulness. Because we don't trust God. And since we don't trust God, we think, I got this. I can fix this. Did God really say this? Did God really tell me that? I don't know if you know, if you've read the first part in Genesis, one of the very first things that the serpent says to Eve is, did God really say? First thing, newsflash, his tricks don't change. Did God really say that? You could probably do this on your own if you really think about it. Like, you're here now. You can do it. Why are you waiting on him? Why you put your hope in him? You right here. Trust in you. Believe in yourself. Let's put that on a t-shirt. Believe in yourself. Everybody, oh, that's a good slogan. That is terrible and unbiblical. What are you going to do? And people are looking for hope in all of the wrong places. Looking for hope in all the wrong places. Sorry, I have a problem with songs. All right, but they're going to look for hope in those prescription bottles. They're going to look for hope from the dealer down the street. They're going to look for temporary relief from this hopelessness. If I can just escape for a little bit, just pass me that bottle, I'll feel better. Maybe, you know, these psychologists, they went to school and they read all these books. They're very smart. We should go. I can find hope in these psychologists and the psychology. Then they'll tell me what I need to hear, and then I can make a difference in me. Maybe if I wouldn't feel so hopeless if I had somebody to share this life with. If I had a kid, then I wouldn't feel so hopeless anymore. If I had more friends or a better job, I wouldn't feel hopeless. I just need that bigger car and that bigger house. I need that new iPhone something that's made of titanium. If I had that, then I wouldn't feel so hopeless. Maybe if I had a higher status, I just need that raise. If I just had this title, then I wouldn't feel so hopeless. I can just keep climbing the ladder. I can keep climbing. I just got to make one more sale. If I can get my name on that wall, employee of the month, parking spot, then I wouldn't feel so hopeless. One thing I love about the Bible is no matter what you come up with, there's an answer. It's like these basic instructions before leaving Earth kind of book. It's like a 66-book love letter. It's amazing. They keep trying to throw stuff at you. He's like, oh, I got an answer for that. Oh, I got an answer for that. Oh, I got, hey, check this. I got two answers for that one. In Matthew chapter 7, verses 24 through 26, Jesus says, the rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against the house. Distractions are coming. Pain is coming. Stuff is happening. Politics is over here. War is over here. The economy over here. Your boss over here. Your kids messed up over here. Your friends over there. Something bad happened over here. All this stuff is happening to the house. But you know what? Because it had its foundation on the rock. Notice it doesn't say on the rocks. Right? Very specific words that Jesus likes to use, right? On the rock, the singular rock, like there's only one rock. There's not like multiple ways to get to that same rock, just the one. Anyway, but everyone who hears, this is key. Everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house upon the sand. Words. It's out there. There's a wonderful meme I saw, and it's these two snowmen, and one snowman says to the other snowman, what are you talking about? We were just randomly created. Like, where? You think you can't find the gospel? It's on Facebook. It's on YouTube. It's on TV. It's on the radio. It's on FM. It's on AM. It's on Spotify. It's on everywhere. You're going to find the gospel everywhere. It's there. It's everywhere. It's everywhere. You in that sand or the rock? Our first verse, 1 and 2, says, to fret is, let me read it first. quick fret because of evildoers. Be not envious herb of unrighteousness, for they will wither quickly. We look. Well, it's really easy to have this feeling of, like, I'm doing so good, God. I'm going to church on Sundays. I'm reading my devotionals. Doing Christian music. I'm raising my kids. I'm doing my Bible. I'm like, why is that celebrity who's evil and turning people away from you doing so well? I can't pay my bills, but this dude over here just won a lottery? Like, hold up, God. I'm treating you right. I give every Sunday till it hurt. That curse. But hold up. You're telling me that those profane things, wants people to worship him, is doing what? Hold up, God. I do good here. I preach the word. Our church is doing great, and we're this and we're that. And then I look at all these false preachers that are lying. They say you are the greatest failure in the history of the Bible. It says who's the biggest failure in the Bible? And he said God. His ministry is growing. Preacher's like, hey, you know why Jesus hasn't come back yet? It's because you haven't given enough money. So open up them wallets if you want Jesus to come back. You are doing so well, and they're prospering. And I'm struggling. To fret is to worry, to have the heart burn, to fume, to become vexed. Nature is very apt to kindle a fire of jealousy when it sees lawbreakers riding spurges and obedient subject in the mire. That's Spurgeon. We look and we're like, that's not fair. That's not fair. Like, how come they're doing so well? Let me paint you a quick picture. Man commits a death row, gets caught up, goes to prison, gets death. He's on death row, sitting there on death row, and they say, hey, tomorrow's the day, man. Tomorrow is the day. What do you want to eat? And he says he just lays it out there. He wants this and that. And then you find out what he ordered for his last meal, and you get jealous of him. You want to switch places? We're jealous of the evildoers? Do you know what they got coming? They're going to fade quickly. They're going to get there, and they're going to die, and they're going to become, uh-oh. And they're going to see Jesus, and Jesus is going to say, depart from me, you doer of your own will, for I never knew you. And then they're going to be gnashing teeth. They're going to be cursing God. They're going to be in pain. They're going to, for eternity. And we were jealous of them. What we will receive versus what they will receive. Think of what we're being envious for when we're looking at these lawbreakers and saying, why can't I be like them? Why can't I have what they have, God? To be envious of the wicked is to question the providence of God. Do you know better than God does? Like, that's what we're doing. Like, how come he's got that, God? Because I know the plan. I got the book covered. I got this. God has plans. Ready? This is, we don't want to hear this. And his plans lead to his glory. His glory. Not our glory. His plans don't lead to our glory all the time. Or necessarily our comfort. It's not going to lead to our comfort either. It's his glory. Maybe for his glory, we need to be a little bit uncomfortable. Right? People like to say that God would never give you anything you couldn't handle. That's a lie from the pit of hell. God is going to give you stuff you can't handle. You know why? So you have to put your hope and trust in him. If you got it, what do you need him for? And look what happens when you put your trust in him. Who gets the glory? God gets that glory. Verses 3 and 4, treat yourself in your way and do good. Dwell in the land and cultivate faithfulness. Delight yourself in Yahweh, and he will give you the desires of your heart. It says trust in Yahweh. How easily do we become distracted from trusting God? We get distracted. I want you guys to think about Peter for a second. Now, when I talk about Peter, I'm talking about Peter. Peter was one of those inner circle disciples, right? When it's like, hey, Peter, you come here, right? You're an inside, right? Peter, he was the one that's got to see the transfiguration of Jesus. Peter, the leader of the disciples after the ascension. Peter, who said, you are the Christ, the Son of the living God. Peter. Peter was identified by his name after Jesus rose from the dead. Peter. He said, go tell the disciples and Peter. Peter was a special guy. Peter knew Christ. Peter knew Christ so well, right? When he's like, Christ, if that's you, this storm happening, it's kind of crazy, but if that's you, bid me to come. And Jesus said, roll through, let's go. And he stepped out of the boat. Now look, I'm not the best swimmer in the world, but I know they didn't have life jackets. I don't know if I had the faith at that moment to go, all right, because there was, remember, all 12 of them on the boat. All 12 are on the boat. Only Peter stepped out. Peter steps out and he's like, oh, hey, that's kind of nice. Okay, he's going, he's walking, eyes on Jesus, trusting in God. And all of a sudden, what's over there? What's over there? Oh, is that lightning? Uh-oh, what's happening? And he starts getting deeper and sinking. And all of a sudden, he starts looking at all the stuff around him. You are walking on water, Peter. What you worried about that for? You see Jesus in front of you, the Christ, the one everybody's been waiting for. You see him, and you start worried about the water? Like, oh, I might drown. You are walking on water, Peter. Let me juxtapose that a little bit with David. David, young shepherd boy, probably around 16-ish years old, going to give his brother some food because, you know, they're fighting the Philistines and whatnot. And he sees, like, hey, how come everybody's chilling? And all of a sudden, this big dude with this big old sword beat me. You yelling and profaning the name of God and saying, like, y'all want some? Come get some. Look, you beat me, you win. And David's like, so who's going? Like, what's up? Hey, king, you're like big, tall, better than everybody else. Like, you're going, right? You're not going? Okay, which one of the soldiers? Y'all chilling? Y'all scared? I don't know if you know who we work for, but we got this God up there, and this giant is nothing. You think David was distracted? God's strength, or Goliath's strength, was irrelevant to David. He didn't care how big he was and how strong he was, because David knew God's strength. He's like, I'm not worried about this. All right? He goes out there with a staff, a sling, and some rocks. And Goliath goes, you come at me with a stick like I'm a dog? This is one of my favorite lines in the whole Bible. And then David goes, oh, I don't even need the stick. Like, ooh, David, you got some faith, David. That's a big dude. But he didn't care. The whole Philistine army is there heckling, cheering. And all of his side doesn't even believe he can do it. Shoo. Go to sleep. Excuse me while I take your sword and take your head and go, hey, Saul, is this what you were scared of? That's you? Okay, I got it. There you go. Let's go. Let's roll. He didn't let the distractions. He knew what his hope was in. He didn't worry. When you know and you're trusting in God, you're good. And you can be content in what you have. Right? Nothing that you face today is going to be stronger than God. I promise you that. Know that he's with you and he's by your side, and you can take hope in that. We got to take solace, right? Because the next verse, it says, dwell in the land and cultivate your faithfulness. Be okay with where you're at, right? Be okay. Take solace in that what God has given you. Even if you have nothing, right? You homeless on the street and you got nothing. Know what you got? You got air to breathe and lungs to breathe it. Everything that you have was given to you by God. Everything. There is not one random molecule that God did not control. He gave it to you. Take solace in that. Now, to delight means to find peace, protection, satisfaction, and a surrendered focus upon God. Because it says, delight yourself in God. Delight yourself in Yahweh, and he will give you the desires of your heart. Delight. The reason many apparent Christians do not delight in God is that they do not know him very well. And the reason they do not know him very well is that they do not spend time with him. Ooh. We have to be in his word like people digging for hidden treasure. We can't make excuses like, oh, well, you know, God, I didn't really have time to do that, so I don't know if it's going to work out, right? You don't want to get there, and God's like, hey, so tell me about some of the stuff you did to serve me. And you're like, oh, well, see, what happened was I didn't really have much time. I had much stuff to do, God. I didn't really have time. And he's like, oh, okay, well, it looks here that you watched the Avengers series 7 times, and you missed church one day for a football game, and instead of reading your Bible, you decided to read this other novel. What was that about not having time? I tell my students all the time, and they hate the quote, but I love it. And I tell them, make a way, not an excuse. Like, oh, I couldn't. Well, could you have, or did you just choose to spend your time differently? What you dig it into, what is your treasure? In college, I ran track, and I was a hurdler. And if you know anything about hurdles, there's these barriers, and they're about so high, and you have to run as fast as you can and jump over said hurdle. If you hit a hurdle, it slows you down. If you stay upright, right? But you have to get out. You got to go fast at the beginning, because if you don't set it up right, you're going to mess it up. You don't know when those trials are going to come. You don't know when the storms are going to hit. But if you are with God and you know God and you are preparing for that, so when that storm comes, you're good. If your house is built on sand and the storm hits, you're not like, oh, let me find a rock to build my house. It's too late. It's too late. You got to trust God from the very, very beginning. And this last part, this is the part that a lot of Americans don't like, right? Because it says, he will give you the desires of your heart. And we think that like, ooh, well, I desire in my heart a new car and a nice house, a nice neighborhood, and I want some new shoes. Like, Your desires will change, and you want what God wants. And when you desire what God wants, and the desires of your heart change to that, that's when you get those desires. This isn't a verse that says you can have whatever you want, whenever you want it. That's not what that means. Because the more you get in there, you're like, oh man, I want what you want. I want what you want. So, Psalm 37, again, 5 and 6. Commit your way to Yahweh. Trust in him, and he will do it. He will bring forth your righteousness as the light and your judgment as the noonday. You got to trust God and promote him. Notice it says, commit your way to Yahweh. Trust in him, and I will do it. That's what it says. He's going to do it. Let him do it. You can't do it anyway. Might as well let him do it. He can do it all day. Commit, trust in him, and he will do it. We're so worried about certain things that are happening, right? But we got to commit to him and truly trust in him. The Lord will do it all. We just got to get out of his way. Like, all right, God, you do it. I don't know how many times I've wanted something and like, I really want this to happen, and then it doesn't. And then I go, okay, God, you win. You do it. And it's done. I'm like, oh. And he's just like, I told you. You just don't want to listen. Quiz time. All right. You guys ready for your quiz? All right. Now, you don't have to out yourself or raise your hand, okay? But just in your head, I want you to think, okay? Some of my youth kids are going to have, my high school group's already taken this quiz. All right. Now, in your head, if you have ever lied before, okay? If anybody's ever lied before, think about that. If you're, what is that? Now, if anybody that's ever lied before, what does that make you? It makes you a liar. Makes you a liar. All right. Have you ever stolen anything before in your entire life, regardless of value? Have you ever stolen anything in your head? Okay. Anybody that says no, I can't believe you because you're an admitted liar. If you've ever lusted for somebody, right? Jesus says if you even lust within your heart, you've committed adultery. I hate that guy. If you've ever hated anybody, oh, I hate that guy. Always parks in my spot. Right? Can't believe I'm just driving down the road, car cuts me off, like, oh, God, I hate that guy. Like, or whatever it is. Like, hey, my ex, oh, they cheated on me. I hate that. I hate them. If you have that hate, that's murder. You committed murder within your heart. Here's the one that a lot of people don't pass. So far of this quiz, there's been one person to pass. So God, he said in the first, like, God needs to be your number one. No idols. No one can be above God. Have you always, in every instance of your life, kept God number one? That's 5 of the 10 commandments. Probably 0 for 5. We're hopeless. We have offended. We have sinned against. And we are guilty of treason against a thrice holy God. Okay, so I have a little illustration for y'all. You ready? Okay. Can I have my volunteers? Okay. So we have one volunteer right here. Okay. And you're going to come right over here with my other volunteer. Other volunteer is going to stay right there, right where you're at. Okay. Pastor, yes, in this illustration, you are going to be Hitler. All right. Wait, this is a good one. All right. Dad, you're Jesus. Okay, now keep in mind, this is an illustration. Jesus was probably not this dark, but we'll work on it. Okay. All right. You are going to be Paul. Okay, see, I'm nice. So I'm going to move Hitler back over here a little bit more. All right, come on, Paul. All right, so here we are. We got Jesus, right? That one guy that passed the test, that would be Jesus, right? We got Jesus. This is God's standard. Perfection. Sinless life. Didn't mess up. God number one. No stealing, no lying, no lusting. Perfect. Worst people we know. Sorry. Hitler. I'm like, oh, he ain't gonna make it. He ain't gonna make it. And then we think, like, Paul, writer of 2/3 of the New Testament. Pretty much all we know about church and church discipline pretty much comes from Paul. Paul's right here. Yeah, keep going, right? And then we're like, oh, man, well, we're probably here-ish, right? I'm not as bad as that guy, so I'm good, right? Like, how am I ever going to get to perfection? It's hopeless. I can never make it. Thank you, guys. All right. You can have a seat now. Thank you. All right. Like, I am weak. I am wretched. And I contribute nothing to my own salvation except for my sin. That's it. Like, I have to trust in Christ and Christ alone. But here's that hope. My only hope to get from where I am to where I need to be, all the way over here. That long pause, that's me still walking. Like, I ain't gonna make it. There's no way for me to get there. It's not going to happen. No chance. I have to find somebody that meets that standard. And when I find that perfect person, that person has to be and stay perfect. They have to live a perfect and sinless life. And then they have to willingly sacrifice that life for me. While knowing that I hate him. While knowing that I am joyfully sending them to their death. Jesus knew while we were yet sinners, died for us. We lied on him. We spat in his face. We pulled out his beard. We beat him senseless, hit him with sticks, mocked him, blasphemed him, embarrassed him, stripped him, dragged him, made him carry a cross, nailed him to the tree. And you know what he says? He says, God, get them fools. No, he says, forgive them. They don't even know what they're doing right now. Forgive them. That's him. But look, that's not where the good news ends. This Advent season, right? You can't appreciate this Advent season. You can't appreciate the nativity and Jesus coming if you do not realize that you have no hope outside of him. That stretch you're never going to make. So he made it for you. Right? And the wonderful thing is, that's the good news, that we have that. Jesus, born to a virgin, lived a sinless life, gave that life as a ransom for sinners, and rose again. That's why we got an empty tomb. Because if you go to the tomb of Muhammad, you know who's in there? Muhammad, he's still in there. Right? If you go to the tomb of Buddha, you know who's in there? Buddha, he's still in there. If you go to the tomb of Joseph Smith, you know who's still in there? Joseph Smith. But if you go to the tomb of Jesus Christ, I don't know if you heard me right now, but if you go to the tomb of Jesus Christ, he ain't there. It's going to be drafty, empty, the door just wide open. Be like, is anybody here? He'd be like, no. He is risen and seated upon the right hand of God, forever intercessing for you. That's the God we serve. That is the gospel. That is the gospel. In Romans 15:13, it says, now may the God of hope fill you with all joy and peace in believing, so that you will abound in hope by the power of the Holy Spirit. Paul is not asking God to simply dump joy and peace onto you. He is asking that as these believers trust in God, their faith will bring joy and peace in their hearts. Now I challenge every single one of you, just like the song we sang, go tell it on the mountain. Go tell this hopeless world that there is hope. And as one cool guy in a blue shirt once said, we know a guy. Thank you.